as to what that impact is. And I don't know whether the proponents that were notified are here or not.
Mr. Chairman, did my ears?
Yes.
Did I hear 30 million?
If the assumption used by AFS is about 600 people that are covered by the provisions of Senate Bill 727 will pass away each month at an average cost of about $2,000, which is written into the bill, that works out $1.2 million a month, about $30 million a biennium. General fund, because the federal government does not participate in burials, it's all general fund cost. It's outside the provisions of the Federal Social Security Act. When we dropped the program, it was running about 100 to 100 and...
About 77 a month.
And the cost was less, but the bill in front of you broadens the responsibility of the division as to who they will make payments for. And they can go over the assumptions of the original bill, but I don't think that's what you want to discuss.
Are there amendments?
I'm not sure.
You are not offering them.
They're not the amendment people. They
Oh, I know that. I just you know, they, but Art, they might have had or seen some, and you have not seen or heard of any.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Mike Kane, Manager of Income Maintenance Section and Adult Family Services Division. We have been working with the Funeral Directors Association on possible amendments, which would, according to what they would like, would reduce the impact to $12 million the next biennium.
I didn't think you wanted me to talk about those either.
No. Well, I was under the impression that the amendments were enclosed inside of this folder, and I was under the impression it took the fiscal impact down to a very minor, and we'll have a hearing on the bill so everybody's acquainted with the subject. It's obvious that we have not got $12 million, let alone 30.
No.
So we, for the record, have
held
a hearing.
Let me hand out the amendments.
Yes.
I have.
For the record, we have had a hearing on the bill, and
okay.
It's the determination that this committee and Ways and Means at this time does not have 30, nor does it have 12 for these present amendments. And so that's where we will stand.
Look at the handout, Mr. Chairman. Go to Section 6 and ask the division to insert the new dollar amounts that they based the $12 million on.
Mm-hmm.
They'll insert there, I think, 70% of that cost, which is what they thought that the proponents of the bill would have wanted there. So those numbers would be...
Mr. Chairman, the insert for Section 6,
okay,
line 43, would be 1,019, and for Section 6, line 3, page 3, line 1, would be 683.
683 on page 3?
Yes, for a total of 1,702.
And using those numbers and using their new number of eligibles that would receive those the burial expenses, it would be still about $12.6
million. Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, I've heard that there are two things that are inescapable. One is death, the other is taxes, but taxes for death is one that is a deadly combination. I assume that most of these costs are cost shifted now within the industry. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Anybody else in the room want to testify on Bill 727? Hearing nobody, we will close the hearing. Oh.
As an afterthought, there must be a way to make the bill more restrictive. If there's any interest at all to propel it forward.
Yes.
I'm sorry, the hearing's over, but that was not the price tag when we discontinued the program.
That's true.
Mr. Chairman, the price tag when we discontinued the program to continue the exact program that we discontinued would be of about $1,400,000.
Okay. For the record.
For the record, and House Bill 2806 continues that program.
2806.
Where is that bill?
Thank you. I forget what committee it is, Mr. Chairman.
Well, there's always the technicality that we had the hearing on the wrong bill.
Mr. Mayor, we'll find the location of that. 2806.
Mm-hmm.
And that would resume the program that we discontinued 2 years ago.
That's correct.
And would not broaden it to this, or the cost is broadened by this.
Or if you've heard human resources subsequent to.
So it apparently resides in human resources with a subsequent referral to us.
They never send us easier ones.
Okay. I think the message probably will go back to the people who are promoting Senate Bill 727 in some form that we couldn't afford it, and one that we wanted to take a look at is in the Human Resources Committee. Okay? So if anybody asks you, that's what I'm going to tell them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Story straight.
Story straight. Okay. There is approximately 45 minutes left in today. We have scheduled finally.
We have session at 2:30.
Okay, we have shorter time then. Bonding. Anybody who wants to talk about bonding for sewers, front and center.
Okay, I'm Brad Hickey with the City of Portland. With me is Dave Gooley, the Bureau of Environmental Services. I'm passing out some brief testimony that we will simply summarize.
That's succinct enough.
As well as some amendments, with also an attachment which describes amendments.
For the record, we are now having a hearing on Senate Bill 878 and House Bill 3101, which are both in this subcommittee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Gooley, City of Portland. Let me tell you just very briefly the origin of Senate Bill 878. On April 25th, 1986, the Environmental Quality Commission ordered the cities of Portland and Gresham to install sanitary sewers in mid-Multnomah County. The area includes about 135,000 people, about 5% of the state's population, about 56,000 homes. The primary infrastructure that's being installed are collection system sewers, so there are also some larger facilities. But each of these homes will experience sewer costs on the average of between $4,500 and $5,500. At the time that the EQC ordered the cities to do this program, and it's a program that will extend between this year and the year 2005, with about 3,500 homes sewered each year. At the time the EQC ordered it, they directed both cities to prepare safety net programs with the basic purpose of ensuring that no one would lose their homes as a result of the sewer costs. Portland and Gresham have both been working on safety net programs since that time and have developed proposals. The basic essence of Senate Bill 878 sets up a process whereby when the state has ordered sewer construction and when those costs fall primarily on property owners as opposed to the local government, then 878 would provide a process whereby the local government could develop a safety net program for protecting property owners from the cost of the program. It would allow the local government then to submit the program to DEQ for review and approval. If approved, it would then provide state funding for the safety net program. The program that we've developed locally is essentially an assessment deferral program for folks who can't afford to pay the sewer assessment and can't afford the financing that's offered under the Bancroft bonding program, and all of them will have access to that. For those property owners that can't afford that, we're talking only about homeowners actually, the safety net program would allow them to defer payment of their assessment until they sold their home. The deferral would occur by a safety net revolving loan fund paying their assessment for them, and then they would reimburse the revolving loan fund with interest at the time that their property was sold. This program focuses only on the cost borne by property owners, not by the cost borne by local government, and it focuses on homeowners as opposed to any other kind of property owner. That essentially is the basic outline of Senate Bill 878, what it does, and what the safety net program that Portland would like to present to DEQ for review and approval, and I understand Gresham's is essentially the same.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I see that there are the dash one amendments attached to the packet that was given to us there, the last item from the back.
If you'd like, I briefly describe them to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to say for the record that I've discussed those amendments with these gentlemen and understand them to be technical in nature in order to meet the requirements of the bonding program.
That's
the financial auditing and accounting of the fund proceeds.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, Senator Cairns. And in fact, I do have a signed copy of the amendments, if I know it's a House rule, from the sponsor and chairman of the committee from which the bill originated. The amendments, briefly, the first page and a half were requested by...
I have one signed by Scott Gallen, so I'm doing better than you.
I thought we weren't going to...
I just couldn't resist. I'm sorry.
I haven't seen Scott lately. I'll get signatures from Scott, too, if you like.
That's an old joke.
Sorry. Briefly, the first page and a half of the amendments were requested by Harvey Rogers, City of Portland's bond council, to clarify certain provisions of the bill to ensure that we can, in fact, if the bill is approved, borrow from the assessment deferral revolving loan fund, et cetera. The last page and a half of the amendments were at the request of legislative council, which is simply an alternative statement of the original Section 3 in the bill. It would delete references in the original bill to subparagraph A, which is a reference to Senate Bill 117, the Clean Water Act Revolving Loan Fund, which says if that passes, that's a potential funding source. And as this new Section 11, which provides an alternative Section 3, it's just, as my understanding is, it's LC preferred format for this type of amendment. Should Senate Bill 117 not become law, the original printed Section 3 will, as amended by these bill, by these amendments, would become law. If it is passed, then Section 11 alternative would be the one preferred by legislative council. One further comment, perhaps if the committee is interested, Dave Gulick can amplify. The City of Portland's plan is a little different from those which are in the process of being prepared by the cities of Gresham and the City of Eugene, which is also potentially eligible under this bill in that it's a negotiated grant sewer construction arrangement. Ours, since it is so large and there are so many potential needy homeowners, it would require some manner of assistance. Ours has been scaled down somewhat. Their programs would provide 100% deferral of assessments for those who qualify for the program. Ours would provide a sliding scale of deferred assessment for people based upon income and asset criteria. Perhaps Dave could say a few words more, but I'll distribute a little slip of paper, which I'll describe to you after you've received it.
Under our proposal, if you are a homeowner with an income less than 200% of the federal poverty level and have assets less than $20,000, with the exceptions of your house and one car, then you would be eligible for at least a portion of your assessment to be deferred. On the right-hand column shows the income cutoffs for a two-person household, on what portion of the assessment could be deferred, and you can see that an income above $14,480 a year, that no assessment deferrals would be allowed. And on the left-hand column, that compares our program to other kinds of assistance programs.
Mm-hmm. The upshot is, if we had 100% deferral for everyone, it would be just simply too large and irresponsible and unwieldy a program. The best deal we thought we could put together for the folks is this sliding scale.
So people who are at the slightly below, actually some $357 below the food stamp eligibility level, would be paying 50% of their assessment.
Yes.
That's about as, shall we say, as tight as one could write it.
Well, the intent here is that through other means, for example, allowing very low income people to defer connecting to the sewer, they will be able to avoid some of the costs, at least until they sell their property, when they would, when the connection would have to be made. And with the availability of Bancroft bonding, which brings the costs down, and we're going to be offering 20-year loans on these, that This program is really targeted to those who are absolutely up against the wall and have no alternative whatsoever other than walking away from their homes from the imposition of these sewer costs, and that's why it's scaled the way it is.
Yeah.
In any event, this is still yet a proposal, and what Senate Bill 878 would call for would be for us to submit this to DEQ for their review and approval.
Okay. How much?
Well, we're getting to that. We've got two people staffed this bonding issue, and there's quite a bit of discussion between the two on this whole quote concept of bonding. These people came to us with the clear understanding that at least for one, maybe for two, the governor, and my concern is general fund and the involvement of which the philosophical point of view is that the general fund should not be in the sewer business, pure and simple, and whether or not there would be a way of construing language for allowing some sort of bonding capability, whether we are the underwriters of that and what that underwriting costs. And I think Sue is going to speak to what that cost to the state general fund is. And it's a few bucks. But before we get to Sue, anybody else that is in this room that would like to speak concerning either bill? Now, you did not say anything concerning 3101.
Right. We are essentially neutral on 3101. It was a compromise that we were engaged in with United Citizens, some citizens that reside out in the mid-Multnomah County area. It was sent, I understand, to this committee because it makes reference to Senate Bill 878.
Yes. Margie?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Margie Sherman on behalf of United Citizens, a group of citizens that were formed to band together to address their concerns about the affordability of the sewer issue. Brad just pretty much said what I was going to say. House Bill 3101 was the result of many, many hours of compromise and negotiations with both the City of Portland and the City of Gresham and United Citizens, and came down to Ways and Means because Section 3 refers to funds.
What does 3101 do?
Bottom line, it reassures the citizens that the game plan's not going to be changed on them without some prior knowledge.
Concerning assessments?
Right, and the sewer plan in general. It does set out in statute citizen advisory boards and the membership thereof. And
just for the record on these assumptions, your committee, Margaret, was the assumption that if the house is to be sold, the debt would be to come due?
United Citizens, in their negotiations with the cities, had tried to get a complete deferral for 100% of the households, and that was one of the criteria by which they would then have to meet their assessment, is if the property was sold. The other alternatives were if the cesspool completely failed and I guess it was a time limit of 5 years that they that they would have. 50% of the households in the area are estimated to have incomes of less than $25,000. The area tends to be low-income, elderly, retired, and the people really are very concerned about needing to or facing the possibility of losing their homes.
Just to amplify and relevant portion of 3101, among the other things that it requires that the cities of Portland and Gresham have a citizens advisory board, which essentially we have already, but now we're essentially mandated by the statute to continue to have that in place. Additionally, it requires that the cities create a safety net program. So I guess for that reason, we're doubly concerned that if this bill passes, that we have some sort of
878
in line. Yes.
Well, if I might, Mr. Chairman, in the Senate committee, before it came down to Ways and Means, in Section 3, they changed wording that had said it shall include copies pursuant to 878, and they changed that to may. And we had asked that the bill not come down to Ways and Means because we didn't feel like as it's.
I've only got the A engrossed bill. So.
Okay, we have B engrossed.
Okay.
What you need. And we have one copy of
B engrossed.
Well, I think it's. I think that, you know, I'm not speaking for everybody in Ways and Means, but I think the concern has adequately been brought that East County has a very bad problem, and that how we can adhere and help or assist in that, we will try our best to do so. And I understand your concerns I think you have to understand our concern. That one is that we aren't in the sewer business, and our general fund income tax paying citizens have got to have some assurance that we're not in the sewer business in East Multnomah.
For homes. Yes, we're in the sewer business for commercial and industrial and agricultural and agri-pack and Eugene.
Anyway,
a lot of people are.
We have, yes.
Just a comment, Mr. Chairman, and Multnomah County and people of Portland 10 years behind most of the rest of the state in construction of sewage treatment works. We had to go through all the state and federal programs, mostly federal, and bonding until you couldn't see straight, mandatory hookups, and if you didn't, a lien was put against your property. To come now, those people in the city of Portland are the ones who went to the Oregon coast and said, we don't like it because you have septic tanks and 1 out of 10 doesn't work, and forced every community in my district to have a sanitary district and a sewage system paid for by the people. Now they discover in East Multnomah County suddenly the laws and the regulations of state and federal government have come down on them. And now they come to the state legislature and ask for assistance. So I need to know what kind of a program they want for sure, and how it's going to be paid for. But I'm not going to support any general fund, of course. Mm-hmm.
We have two analysts here that would like to take us through this bill as far as which one. Sue's first.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you. The indications on the general fund obligation under here are $200,000 to $300,000 per year. A couple of things that would finance. One would be an upfront debt service on those loans. And potentially that these loans are zero or low interest loans. Why that is, I'm not clear. If the actual financing of that was to be from the sale of those loans, why should the interest rate be any different than on a normal loan? Okay, that's not clear to me. Nor is it clear the term of that loan to those individuals. Okay, I don't think that is stated as well. So those are just a couple of concerns with the bill. I think the executive department has indicated concerns on limiting how much general fund, if you're going to put general fund in at all, limiting that amount, potentially, what did you say, 3,500 homes per year. I hope that's a mix of homes, not everyone falling into the first buying any who would qualify for this. But you do have potentially that kind of a problem as well. So within any one biennium, it may indeed be more than the $600,000 obligation to the general fund, because this will extend itself over a period of years.
The issue of low interest loans or zero interest loans, what we were trying to shoot for there was that at the very least that the loans made to properties that defer sewer assessments be calculated at a simple interest rate, so that if you held on to your home for a long period of time, you didn't rack up interest costs such that by the time you sold your property, the assessment was greater than the value of the home. So that's essentially what we mean by low interest is that at the very least that they be calculated at simple interest rate.
That's easy to do. Mm-hmm. That simple interest is different from zero. Mm-hmm. Simple interest is different from compound interest is the difference you were trying to make.
Exactly. Well, that language was put
like
there.
Mr. Chairman, the same thing that we do on senior citizens' property tax deferral program, which is that simple interest.
Yeah. That one is actually another thing about 878, it was patterned after the state senior citizen assessment deferral program the state currently offers. The problems that we've had with that in public meetings in Mid-County is that the way that program works is that you must first finance your assessment, establishing a payment schedule. The state then makes those payments for you and charges 6% interest on each payment. So you have interest on the original financing and you have 6% interest on the payments the state makes, which equate to right now around 15-16% interest rate on deferred assessments. What the folks in Mid-County were asking for was rather than first financing the assessment and having the state pick up the payments, to have the state pick up the entire payment, defer that at a fixed, simple interest rate until they sold their property.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
mm-hmm.
That $600,000 is estimated in biennium to be a debt service cost, but is this program in its entirety, in other words, from day one to day end, expected to be balancing out? That is to say, all dollars advanced are recouped, but not within a single biennium. Is that correct?
Exactly. It's a cash flow problem. Right. The money, depending on the interest rate the state charges, would come back. It's just that it would come back at some indefinite point in the future. We estimate that the turnover rate, for the first time turnover in Mid-County, is roughly 4-5%. So there's a steady turnover of houses. The money would come back, but it's not at the predictable rate. We also estimate a slightly different assumption concerning the financial need. There's been a great deal of discussion between ourselves and the department concerning the actual demand for this program.
The Department of Environmental Quality.
Mm-hmm. In the opinion of the department, the need for this program or the demand for it will be much less than what the potential. You might assume the potential if you looked at just only at the income figures. And the reason is that most people simply don't like to defer.
Exactly.
The cost, and they'll do whatever they can to pay it if they have to turn to their children or whatever. The department's opinion is that the actual demand for the program will follow what the Senior Citizens Assessment Deferral Program participation rate is, which is roughly 10% of the eligibles actually participate in. Excuse me, that's the property tax deferral program. I understand that from the Department of Environmental Quality that around 1% of the eligible senior citizens for the special assessment deferral program actually participate in it. Our feeling is that in terms of funding, our preference would be to have funding in the realm for Mid-County, and this bill applies to anywhere in the state where sewers are ordered by the state, but for Mid-County to have funding available in the realm of approximately $200,000
per year
with the option of coming back once the DEQ has reviewed and determined what the approved program will look like, and also once we have a better idea of what the actual demand for the funds will be. It may be, and based on the department's position, it may be that $200,000 would be adequate for the biennium.
Using a statewide figure or using a Mid-County figure?
Using primarily a Mid-County figure, but the incremental cost for other places in the state would be very small, given that Mid-County has got a population of 135,000 folks. And when you the other largest area would be the City of Eugene's River Road Santa Clara project. Mm. And that's got, I think, about 15% of the size, between 10 and 15% of the size. And after that, the other mandated sewer areas are relatively small.
For the record, the River Road Santa Clara lies within my boundaries in my district.
They have a problem down there too, don't they?
We're working on it. Been working on it for years.
Okay, we got to call a Senate, but just before we go,
same daylight.
We've got. I'd like to continue this to the next time we can meet.
Okay.
Which is
later this afternoon.
Later this afternoon, be fine with me. Would you take back to your respective parties the thought that I've got in mind? And that is the concern I have to the general fund of whether or not amendment added to this bill, which, whatever that cost, we know to the general fund, whether it is a startup or whatever, if I guess the city and the county would mind if we would hold back revenue sharing of that amount. Would you be able to find that answer out for us?
We will see if we can find an answer out for you, yes.
Well, the concern I have is that it's difficult for me to grant bonding authority or the ability to do so and have it also be a cost to the general fund, and whether or not this advantage for the bonding and the right to do so,
well,
for the areas of which it is an advantage of so much good nature, that would be a willingness to pay in some area to make up for that.
Mr. Chairman, I assume that when the program liquidated, that those monies would be held in